Let's hear from Alderman Brian Hopkins. So one of the things that became one of the viral videos of the weekend when we talk about the violence were these large groups of young people who were running through the streets in the Loop. The police say the crowd peaked at 400 at one point. There were injuries. There was violence. I know, Alderman Hopkins, it's near your ward, not in it, but I heard that you had actually either driven by or witnessed it somehow. And I'm thanks for calling in. I'm interested in hearing what it is you saw and your feelings.
Yeah, I did respond to an incident that was in my ward in Michigan and Pearson. And while I was there, I heard about the activity a little bit further south on Michigan. So I went to see for myself. And it's an image that you can't forget. Large numbers of young people just running in all directions. It has a very dangerous, chaotic feel to it. You just don't know what's going to happen. And even if it's just large crowds running, blocking traffic, it just creates that sense of disorder. And then when you find out that, a number of them have weapons, they're carrying mace, they're carrying knives, and unfortunately, some of them are carrying guns. It's a volatile situation. It's like a tinderbox just waiting for a spark that's going to set the whole thing up. And you mentioned there were a couple of injuries. We had a police officer who had a firework thrown at him, and it detonated right next to his ear. So there's a possibility he'll suffer permanent hearing damage. And then another police officer who was injured taking an offender into custody who was resisting arrest. As most of the arrests that I observed, the person who was being arrested did not want to be arrested and resisted with physical force. So that's, another thing that you're seeing an increase in is just a complete lack of respect for the police, whether it's twerking on cars, or you're refusing to follow orders, or putting up a fight when you're taken into custody. It's just, all around, it's just a very dangerous situation. And it's only a miracle that nobody was actually murdered.
Mm-hmm. In the Loop, that is. Of course, we had, 18 people killed this weekend alone, which is tragic and absolutely tragic. I don't know if you saw that one report, Alderman Hopkins. I read about it, and I'm still sort of wondering about it. There were fireworks being thrown in the direction of police. I think it's the incident you're talking about. A woman was interviewed, and she said the police didn't even go after the man who threw them. And the guy just kind of walked away. Is that because of the no chase policy? Had you heard about this? Trying to do that would not be apprehended?
A number of instances where people were using Roman candles as weapons. And in the two occasions that I saw that happen, the Roman candle is a very distinctive, firework. It sets off flaming projectile balls in succession, seconds apart. So you could tell what it is. On both instances, the police chased the person who they thought was responsible for it. It's dark, it's chaotic, there's a crowd everywhere. Sometimes difficult to identify the exact individual who's doing that because they don't stand in one place. But in both the occasions that I witnessed, there was an attempt to apprehend the person doing it. I don't know if it was successful or not.
Okay, so you did see them trying to apprehend them. I mean, I can only imagine what police were up against there as fireworks were being thrown in their direction, and you have this large group of people, some of them violent, not seemed like a lot of them. What were they doing, just running through the streets? What did you witness?
Yeah, I did. I witnessed quite a bit of that. There were people who seemed to be just enjoying the thrill of it, who were not necessarily there for criminal purposes, just, caught up in the excitement of it. And then people clearly who were there to rob and steal and fight and, use weapons. So how do you tell those two apart if you're a police officer? Very difficult to do. And it's, just a high stakes decision that you have to make in that exact moment if the person you're confronted with is just someone downtown to, for the thrill of it who got caught up in the crowd, or someone who actually does represent a threat to your safety and the safety of others. It's not an easy thing to do. And the amount of stress on our police officers, it can't be overstated. As I said, this is such a volatile situation, and there's just an atmosphere of extreme danger that is present throughout these activities when, hundreds and hundreds of people just running loose in the streets.
Yeah.
It's as bad as you think it is.
Well, and when you think about how many shots were fired across our city in the weekend, to hear firecrackers going off all around you with the mob of people, it's difficult to distinguish that alone, I think. And that is hard enough. 57 arrests made, 50 of them juveniles. I heard one of the solutions, and maybe you're a supporter of this, is to start cracking down on curfew again. The curfew alone is a reason enough to, I don't know, do they arrest you? Do they try to disperse you? How does that go?
Yeah, I believe there were about 24 curfew arrests where there were no other complicating factors. It was just a straight up arrest for a juvenile violating curfew, you know, after hours downtown, ignoring requests to, you know, go home, leave the area. You know, that's far from a perfect solution, but I do support it. I'm going to stand by the superintendent's decision if it was in fact his, or the commander's decision if it was in fact his, whoever made that order, to start arresting juveniles for ignoring the, you know, ignoring the curfew. We don't have too many tools in our toolbox as law enforcement at that exact moment when things like that are happening. It's really not a lot they can do. You know, that there were repeated commands to disperse and leave. The police showed great restraint in trying to guide people to leave, to, you know, break up the large crowds. It was only at a last resort that they started making arrests. So, you know, I don't feel good about it. I'm not celebrating it, but I understand that at that point, it may have been the best of a series of very bad alternatives.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And it does seem as if there are alternatives need to be sought out, because what we're seeing there isn't working. What we're seeing in the city right now isn't working. Would you agree with that? And would you agree? Do you think we are on the right path? Do we have solutions that are being tried now that you think will be successful?
Yeah, well, you know, I made a comment to one of the news reporters that I'm, you know, being, and you know, criticized on social media for saying that I thought the police did overall a better job. And you know, people interpret that as saying, oh, well, you know, we solved the problem. We know what to do now. No, that's not what I said. And that's not what I'm implying. It is possible for the police to vastly improve both their training, their planning, and their tactical response to these kind of incidents. And I will tell you, in the last year, they have worked very hard to make those improvements. And I saw a difference. I noticed it. I was out there in both looting incidents last year in May and August, and I know what I saw. And I know, to compare that to what I saw Sunday, a dramatic improvement in the police tactical response. The professionalism, the discipline, the composure, it was noticeable from the command staff on down. That doesn't mean we solved the problem. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean everything's okay. You know, not at all. We still have a lot of work to do. And situations like the one that just happened Sunday night in the Loop probably isn't the last time it's going to happen. And it also highlights the limits of police work, of how far we can actually go, and the tools that we're using, the technology, the Strategic Decision Support Center. I talk a lot about that because that involves surveillance cameras, that it involves people in remote locations watching the situation from a different vantage point and communicating in real time with the police officers on the ground. And we're doing a much better job of using that particular tool than we have in the past. So we've made a lot of strides, you know, and I think the credit should be given, you know, when it's due. I've criticized the mayor and I've criticized Superintendent Brown. So it's only fair of me to acknowledge, you know, when they try to make a difference and improve the situation. And if we see the results of that out of fairness, that should be acknowledged, too.
Alderman Brian Hopkins, thank you for the time today. I know it's a busy day for you. Thank you for weighing in here on WGN. Alderman Ray Lopez joins the show, 14th Ward Alderman. Your thoughts, your feelings about where we should go from here, Alderman, after just a horrible, horrifying weekend in the city.
Well, Anna, good afternoon, and I hope you had a relatively safe holiday weekend. Unfortunately, we saw that so many in our city did not have a safe weekend. We have 20 dead, 104 shot, I believe. And I think especially after hearing the superintendent Friday tell the city council that he was going to stay the course and stick with the program that has been in place since Memorial Day, and to have it fail yet again tells me, as I tweeted out earlier, that he has failed us and will continue to fail us. And what's it going to take now for Mayor Lightfoot to finally fire Police Superintendent Brown for failing to keep Chicagoans safe? I think, you know, this is a conversation that is being had all across the city. I know it's been raised by a number of my colleagues, myself. But now it's, you know, even more evident that even articulating a plan, as he did last week, does not keep people safe in the city of Chicago.
Just heard from Alderman Hopkins that he felt that some of the things that they employed, obviously we cannot call this weekend successful by any means, but he felt that some of the strategies police involved, that police employed in terms of confronting the flash mobs downtown, the crackdown on curfew violations and things like that, that they weren't necessarily doing before, that some of that was helpful. I don't know what you think overall about the strategies employed. Was it exactly the same as you've seen in the past? What would you say? Did they try anything new at all that you felt as if was effective?
Well, I don't think that we actually did much that was new. I think, you know, congratulating the superintendent on finally cracking down on curfews, long overdue. It's something that we've all advocated for. But, you know, I see more of the same finger-pointing out of him today in discussions of, you know, how he's trying to explain away what happened this weekend. And, you know, he says that we've talked about, you know, whole government approaches ad nauseum. He sounds like he's at the end of his tether. And I don't know if he has any new ideas or proactive ideas that are going to help the city of Chicago, because I've yet to hear any other than the same three talking points, that it's guns, it's repeat offenders, and it's the courts. Well, we understand that. We know that we don't have a good partner in the court system right now, both on the bench and on the prosecutorial side. We get that. We know that. We've heard that routinely. But when you look and see what our officers are being told to do by brass that is not implementing policies that are beneficial, that is something the city can control. And I don't think the city is controlling its end of the equation as well as Brown likes to say it is. And that is where we have issues. When you are not able, and I've said this repeatedly on your show and as your listeners know, mm-hmm. when you are not able to maintain beat integrity, when you're not able to answer 911 calls in the neighborhood, not just downtown, not just in the Central Business District, but in the other 70-plus neighborhoods in the city of Chicago, we have a problem. When you have a commander shot trying to break up a party, we have a problem. And we need to seriously have a come-to-Jesus moment in this city and say what's working, more than likely what's not, and how do we move forward? Because we cannot continue for through September with more of the same failed policies, not keeping all of Chicago safe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you in terms of this ain't the path to success. We can all see that. And we certainly know all the partners are not working together, which I think is going to be hard to overcome in terms of moving forward with a successful strategy. Is there something you could pinpoint that you would say, why are we not doing this? Why not just do this?
Well, one of the things that I think that we need to start doing is when we arrest people, we need to hold them, even if we have to hold them ourselves before turning them over to the ASA, to Kim Fox, for as long as possible. If we can do a 24-hour hold, then let's start sweeping corners and looking for people who are electronic monitoring violators and have them held for 24 hours or 72 hours as part of an ongoing investigation. We can keep people off the streets, particularly those that we know are the repeat routine offenders terrorizing our neighborhood, but we're not doing that. Additionally, we need to get our detectives back on the beat, focusing on their jobs. You know, the superintendent said he's got 50% clearance rates. That just means you're closing the cases. You're not solving them. And as we're closing and clearing more and more cases, those same people that are causing problems in our neighborhoods are getting a pass as well. And that has nothing to do with the courts. That has nothing to do with Kim Fox. That has to do with our own police department instructing detectives to close out cases so that they could go stand on a street corner in uniform. I'd rather have our detectives solving cases and putting people in lockup than standing outside to look pretty.
Yeah, I mean, you see the blue flashing lights, that strategy, they would say worked for the downtown area. It's working. They say that they're doing it in other places. I don't know what you think about that. There's just sort of that presence, letting people know that there are police there. That's part of the strategy. It doesn't seem to be working in the neighborhoods.
No, and it didn't work downtown either, to be honest with you. And I mean, you had officers who were providing presence and who would become targets of mortars and bottle rockets on the 4th of July. You had cop cars where young people were, again, dancing and twerking and making their latest and greatest TikTok videos on our police cars.
Right.
And that presence shows that we are no longer having the desired effect. We are now becoming the prop as opposed to the deterrent, and we need to become the deterrent once again. And I think that is where, you know, the superintendent and I have two points of agreement. We must have consequences, 100%. And right now, our police department is not doing as much as it can in its own realm to ensure consequences are to be had. And, you know, I just want to also add one thing, too, that, you know, the other thing I agree with him on is that our officers are heroes. They are working through their weekends, 12-hour shifts, if not more, trying to keep it together under the worst possible circumstances. And I think that we should all pray for their families and for themselves and for them, because it cannot be easy to know that, you know, with so much going against you, that you still have to rise up and stand for the city.
Absolutely. I'd agree wholeheartedly. And anyone who's seen any of those videos could see the way the police responded in the most difficult circumstances possible. That you got to give them credit. You got to give them credit. The strategies overall aren't working, but the police are working overtime, literally and figuratively, yep, to try to be part of the solution. And I hope and pray that we all find solutions. I got to run here, Alderman Lopez, but thank you. Appreciate your time today.
And a pleasure as always.
All right. You heard two very different representations of fact from the police superintendent and the top prosecutor. Today alone, they've said it in the past, but today alone, we heard two very different perspectives. Superintendent Brown said, "We are arresting people for murder, multiple suspects." He detailed some of them. He says they're currently out on bail. They're out on bond. They're not facing any consequences. Then you heard Kim Fox, the Cook County State's Attorney. I'm with John Williams earlier. They're not arresting the people pulling triggers. The police aren't. When they do, we're charging 94% of those cases. Pat O'Brien, former judge, Cook County, former prosecutor in the County State's Attorney's office. I don't know. Can those two things be true? They don't seem to me like they can, Pat.
Well, as per usual, I think each person that you speak to is going to have their own perspective. Some of that perspective is an attempt to defend what may be problems that they've created themselves. If I could just say, there are a number of parties that have a part to play in the criminal justice system. That includes the county board, which finances the public defender, the state's attorney's office. You've got the police department, suburban and Chicago. You've got the judges and the chief judge, who assign judges to particular courtrooms and then sets policy for those judges. You've got the sheriff's office, who obviously plays a small part in suburban arrests, but plays a large part in persons who are placed on electronic monitoring and monitoring those persons. And then finally, you have the state's attorney. I think each of those players has some part to play and some responsibility to bear. But the key and overriding player in the criminal justice system is the state's attorney and her policies on how to get people to trial and what kinds of sentences to recommend when those persons are convicted, or what kinds of pleas to recommend when persons are ready to plead guilty.
So when she says we're charging 94% of those cases, the sentences could be lesser, is that what you're saying? Or the pleadings could be lower than in the past? Or how would you represent what you see as someone who understands the system well?
Well, the charging of cases doesn't end the responsibility of any of the players, and certainly not the state's attorney. And the reason I say that is, I think the sheriff and the Chicago Tribune in editorial, there's 90 persons charged with homicide, murder, who are out on electronic monitoring. Sheriff never intended to monitor those people, and you've got to talk about the courts putting them out there, the state's attorney not getting them to trial, and the sheriff not demanding additional sheriff's personnel to basically determine where those people are.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at those numbers myself. I got them last week, exactly what you're talking about, electronic monitoring, and it goes through the list. You've got 573 people currently out on aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, armed habitual criminals, 269 on electronic monitoring, aggravated battery, 209, murder, 91, as you point out, murder has 91, attempted murder, 29, and you can go down the list. in the past, would someone who was charged with murder be out on bond or be out on electronic monitoring?
Probably neither, although there'd be a small number potentially who individual cases might show that being out on bond is a appropriate kind of situation until trial. But I would say this, that would be a small number. And even those who are out on the waiting trial, they shouldn't be waiting a long time. I looked at the sheriff's in custody defendants and the times that they're presently in county jail. There's almost 200 defendants in continuous Cook County custody who are there more than 5 years.
Hmm.
So that's people that essentially they should be at trial. There may be a few instances where there's some special reason why that length of time exists, but you've got to get people to trial quicker. And that's the state's attorney's duty. And you can't keep people on bond a significant period of time. That's also the state's attorney's duty. And when the sheriff has problems monitoring those who are out in electronic monitoring, the state's attorney has got to have a unit that monitors those persons and reports the people who violate monitoring to the judges so they can change the conditions of how they're out waiting trial.
Cook County Sheriff Dart was on with me last week, and he mentioned that he's got people in the county jail who, by the time they get to trial or get to face a judge at all, that they've already served enough time that it's just sort of time served by, they're gone. It kind of speaks to your point. I want to ask you about something else that's out there, because I think you can do a lot to provide clarity for us, Pat. You're hearing another spat out there between the mayor and even the superintendent who say our courts are shut down, our courts are too slow. That's part of the problem. Open up the courts. And then you see fact checkers like the BGA, who I respect a lot, say, well, wait a minute, the courts are not closed. They're open. They've been open. Is there a problem with the backlog that is causing some in the system or enough people in the system to not face consequences, not get through that sort of system as quickly as they should?
Well, COVID has been a unique challenge, and it's prevented irresponsibly jurors or people, prospective jurors, to be called into the building because of the potential, certainly before we had any vaccines, to catch COVID. It just didn't make sense. But since March of this year, there has been a limited, if you will, trials. But they should be, obviously more. I'm looking at the state's attorney's dashboard. This is as of today. There has been one jury trial since March of this year, since the end of March. There have been 20 bench trials since March. To put this in perspective, there are 50 felony courtrooms, both in the city at 26th Street and in the 5 suburban courthouses. This kind of level of activity really is unacceptable. And in part, the chief judge has got to take the blame. And I know judges that are there may not like to hear this, but up until now, they've been on reduced schedules. They've been working 2 days one week and then 3 days the next, and another set of judges would mirror that. Mm-hmm. Now, I can appreciate, having been a judge, that kind of schedule, but these are public servants, and my guess is most of them, if not all of them, want to help and get this crime problem under control. They want to be back at work. They want to, basically, there's a lot of people, not a lot, but some people who are charged who are going to be found not guilty or cases dismissed. Get them out of the system.
Right.
Don't let them linger.
Pat O'Brien, thank you so much for weighing in. As he mentioned, the right to a speedy trial is another thing to be considered here, not just the folks who face consequences in the system.